This is Word of Mouth from New Hampshire Public Radio. I'm Logan Shannon, in for Virginia Prescott. For comedian Maj Gibrani, acts of terrorism feel somehow personal. Here he is on his I Come in Peace comedy tour.
Like, I don't know if you guys remember this, a couple years ago in Times Square, there was a Pakistani guy tried to blow up a car bomb in Times Square. Now, I happened to be there that night doing shows just a few blocks away. And a few months before that, in Austin, Texas, there was a white guy who flew his plane into the IRS building in Austin, Texas. And I happened to be in Austin, Texas that day doing a show. Yeah. Yeah. As a Middle Eastern male, when you start showing up around a lot of these activities, you start feeling guilty at one point. I was watching the news. I'm like, am I involved in this crap?
You may know Maj Gibrani as a panelist on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, but he is also the author of the memoir, I'm Not a Terrorist, But I Play One on TV. Virginia spoke to Maj when it was first published. It is now available in paperback.
Maj Gibrani, welcome to Word of Mouth.
Thanks for having me. How you doing?
Well, I'm very well and very excited to talk with you because, you know, I've wondered what it's like for someone who is of Middle Eastern descent. You know, you're joking there about profiling yourself after so many experiences of being profiled. And I couldn't help but wonder if comedy is a way of getting to the truth. What part of that is true for you?
Well, you know, it is. I think comedy, I always say, is like therapy. And we talk about the truth and we laugh at it. We laugh through it, I guess. A lot of that is true. I mean, it's funny because ultimately, I personally have never been profiled at an airport, but I have friends and family who've had things happen to them. I read about it all the time. And so eventually it gets in your head. So I know specifically after September 11th, the first time I traveled, I felt guilty. I didn't know why. I hadn't done anything, but there was so much, I think, antagonism towards people that look like me that I felt like I was going to be stopped and interrogated. It's that feeling of when you go through that metal detector and you feel like something's going to beep. Mm. That got to like a really extreme place. So it's interesting. I talk about it in the book. I talk about getting these silly ideas in your head of like, maybe like there's some organization who knows of me and they're doing terrorist things around where I am. I don't know what. So this weird paranoia sets in. I don't know why.
Well, maybe you haven't been profiled in an airport, but you were typecast long before September 11th. You dropped out of UCLA. You were on the stand-up circuit and the manager, was it at the Comedy Store, told you to wear the outfit, you know, like a robe and a turban.
Yeah, you know, Mitzi Shore, who's the owner of the Comedy Store, and she, I always preface this story by saying I owe a lot of my career to her because the Comedy Store in Los Angeles is this mecca of comedy. You want to be a regular at this club and be there and grow. And the way you become a regular is by auditioning in front of Mitzi Shore. This was when she was healthier. She's a little older now and she's not at the club anymore. And the night when I auditioned, I remember doing the set, and as I was walking off the stage, she goes, "Congratulations, you're very funny." That's how she talks. And I go, "Thank you, Mitzi." And she goes, "I'm going to make you a regular." I go, "Thank you." She goes, "Have you ever thought about wearing the outfit?" And I was like, "Outfit?" She goes, "Yeah, you know, the hat and the gown." And then she makes kind of a circly gesture, and I go, "Oh, like a turban." She's like, "Yeah, I think you should wear that." And then I have this moment in my mind where I'm like, do I say no or do I accept and, you know, sell my soul? And I basically was like, yeah, Mitzi, that's a great idea. I'll definitely wear the outfit. And I walked out of the club and I'm thinking, what did I just agree to do?
But you sort of played the stereotype to get out of it, too. How'd you do that?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I turned the card so fast because I had like a week or two of just trying to get out of wearing the turban. And finally, I remembered hearing that there was an Iranian performer in Los Angeles who used to make fun of the mullahs. And supposedly, I guess he was at an event. Some Iranians showed up. They threw a rock and they blinded him in an eye. So I called up the club and I said, listen, I don't know if you guys have heard about this, but these guys take it seriously. And I could wear a turban, but if I do, they may show up and they may attack me. Worse yet, they may attack the club. And so they said, you know what, just wear something casual. And I got out of that one.
Well, this has come up for you over and over in one of your early movie roles. You played a terrorist in a Chuck Norris film. And mind you, Chuck Norris did play a college professor in that same film. But there was kind of a moment of clarity for you about that role and what you wanted to do in the future. What happened for you?
It was early in my career. I had a day job at an advertising agency. I was an assistant. I was hoping to find more film and TV work that would let me quit my day job. So I got this gig on this Chuck Norris movie of the week, and I was playing an Afghan terrorist who was going to blow up a building in Chicago. This was pre-9/11. And I thought, okay, you know what? At least I'll get it right. Because, you know, as you said, you know, Chuck is doing something different. He's going to be a professor in this movie. I was like, maybe they're thinking outside the box here. So I went to the wardrobe fitting, and I was playing an Afghan in America. And they go, here's your shirt, here's your pants, here's your turban. And I was like, oh, I go, listen, let's get this right. You know, Afghans don't wear turbans. Indian Sikhs in America wear turbans. And they're like, dude, this is a Chuck Norris movie. What are you talking about? And finally I said, listen, you tell the producers I'm not going to wear the turban. It's not right. It's not the right thing to do. So I showed up the next day, and there's my shirt, there's my pants, and there's what looks like a scarf. So I was like, oh, scarf. I go, I definitely wear. I have no problem being a scarf-wearing terrorist. And she's like, that's not a scarf. That's the turban. You got to wrap it around your head. I was like, oh, man. And then when I came back to Los Angeles, I told my agents and you know, that no more terrorist parts.
Well, so what happened then? What kind of roles could you get?
I've played cab drivers. I've played falafel shop owners. I don't mind those parts because I feel like I know those people. When I go to New York, when I go to Chicago, you know, there's people like that that own these places or drive the cabs. But I've never met a terrorist. I don't know a terrorist. And the bigger thing about the terrorist thing is that I feel like it's such a small percentage of the population, yet it represents the population so much in American film and television.
I'm speaking with the actor and comedian, Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me panelist, and now author Maz Jobani. His new memoir is called I'm Not a Terrorist, But I Played One on TV. Well, let's talk about you growing up. You came to the U.S. long before any of these roles, and before the 1979 revolution. Your impression of America was largely formed through television shows like The $6 Million Man, like Dallas Dynasty. So what did you expect when you came here? You know, big hair and cowboy hats?
Yeah, I was 6 years old, and it was right before the Iranian revolution. I always say that a lot of people didn't realize the revolution was actually going to happen. My father was on business in New York, and at the time it was our winter break from school, so he sent for my mother to bring my sister and me to New York to be with him for a couple of weeks during our winter break. And I always say we packed for 2 weeks, we stayed for 35 years or whatever it is now. And as a kid, I didn't know much. I remember coming to America. My father was a successful businessman, so he was staying at the Plaza Hotel in New York, and it happened to be right across the street from FAO Schwartz.
You were in heaven.
Yeah, I'm like, wow, America is amazing. And I was thinking, this revolution is really working out for me. And I was just a kid, and none of the geopolitical stuff really hit me until, I believe, when we moved out to Northern California, and that's around the time the hostage crisis happened. And I talk about in the book about having a sixth grader pick on me for being from Iran and calling me an effing Iranian. That's what they called you back then.
Iranian.
Mm-hmm. And jokingly, I would tell them, you know, it's not Iranian, it's Iranian. Secondly, you're bigger than me, so it's whatever you want it to be, you know. And thirdly, I'm not even Iranian, I'm Italian. Ciao.
So you were trying to pass or become invisible even. How'd that work out for you?
You know, it didn't work out that well because you would try to pass and then your loud immigrant parents would show up and always out you. You know, one thing that I learned early was as a kid, I was a good athlete. That helped. I think that that's around the time that I realized that being funny helped. And I think that that's probably what led me to get into this world of comedy, just trying to make people laugh and accept you. Again, things would go great until your rich Persian dad would pull up in a Rolls Royce to pick you up, and you'd be like, oh, dude.
I love the idea of also your entire family, all your relatives showing up when you had soccer practice.
Oh, my God. It was crazy. It's like, I don't know why. I don't know if it's an immigrant mentality. I jokingly say in the car that I think that we're afraid that a revolution is going to happen from the house on the way to picking me up at soccer. So the whole family gets in the car. In case a revolution happens, we could just keep driving to Argentina.
It's funny reading the voice that you give to your relatives in the book. to me, it reads like a traditional Jewish mother voice. Is there something going on there? Is there a similarity? Am I reading that right?
No, you're absolutely right. As a matter of fact, I always explain to people that when I perform in an audience that has immigrants, I think that I find the similarities between Jewish mothers, Middle Eastern, you know, Iranian mothers, Arab mothers, Italian mothers. There's this commonality that they all have, the whole thing of like feeding you, the thing of you know, wanting to find you a wife at a young age, a good wife that they approve of. It's not about who you approve, it's who they approve. You know, them wanting to be a lawyer or a doctor because that's what the community wants. There's so many similarities, it's ridiculous. And it's funny, I've actually been talking about this recently. When I first started with my stand-up, you know, I've been doing stand-up for 17 years, I would talk about being Iranian and, you know, my Iranian parents. But as I kept going, I realized that I started replacing that word with immigrant. Hmm. And that came one night I was doing a joke about how my mother told me, you know, to save my money and where to put my money. And jokingly, I said, you know, we don't put it in 401ks. They encourage us to do what our grandmothers do, which is to put it in our bras. That's where my grandmother would put all her money, in her bra. And as I was telling that joke, there was these two Mexican girls at the Laugh Factory, and they were just cracking up. And I realized, oh, wow, their grandmother puts her money in her bra as well. And it made me realize that we have so many things in common that it's pretty amazing.
Well, you have done stand-up now all over the Middle East, but never in Iran. And there's so many active, passionate expatriates from Iran. Do you ever get any pressure to really take on the politics or the religion in an aggressive way, you know, kind of take a stand?
You know, it's interesting. First of all, the reason I've never done shows in Iran is because I've done jokes in the past that make fun of the leadership. So right. I don't want to show up and test it, you know, because I don't think I'd get past the airport. You know, they'd say, oh, we've been waiting for you. Where have you been? You know, you're performing tonight in Evin prison. So that's why I've never even thought about going there. For the most part, I think people that come to my shows, they appreciate that I kind of gingerly step around the political stuff, and I make jabs. You know, during the Bush administration, I would make fun of Bush and Ahmadinejad, and it felt to me like they were the same guy. They were comedy gold, those two guys. So I think a lot of people appreciate that, and sometimes people will, you know, give you suggestions with things happening in Iran. I mean, right now the nuclear issue obviously is a hot issue. Mm-hmm. And I've been talking about that for a long time, the nuclear issue. You know, I used to make fun of the fact that it was, you know, a peaceful nuclear program and, you know, we blow you up, then we hug you. And then now the joke I'm making about it is just how long it's taken to do the negotiations and how anyone who has any Persian friends knows that our hellos take hours of bowing and, you know, kissing. And so I said, that's why it's taking so long, because every time the Americans show up to negotiate, the Iranians just keep saying, hello, hi, hello, like keep bowing. Once the Americans are finally ready to negotiate, the Iranians want to have some tea. That's what's been taking so long, is all the formalities.
Well, I guess that we should start saying goodbye now, Maz, because, I don't know, we've got, 10 minutes left on the clock.
Oh, yeah. I'm telling you, if you ever want to see how ridiculous it is, go to a Persian wedding. It's like half an hour of hellos, 45 minutes of goodbyes. I mean, I've done shows before where most of the audience is seated, but the Persians are out in the lobby still saying hi. And the manager's like, can we get started? I go, yeah, get started. He goes, but there's like, you know, he's like 50% are out in the hall. I go, don't worry. As soon as the lights go out, they're coming in.
Oh, Maz, what a pleasure speaking with you. Thanks so much.
Thanks for having me. This was fun.
That's Maz Jobrani, Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me regular, talking about his memoir, I'm Not a Terrorist, But I Play One on TV. It is now available in paperback.